Good morning. My name is Sylvie, and I will be your conference operator today. Thank you for joining Calcimimetics' Phase 2b CARPO top-line data readout conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a live question-and-answer session. At that time, you will need to press star one on your telephone keypad to get in the queue. Please be advised that this call is being recorded. For those of you participating via conference call, the slides have been made available via webcast and also be accessed by going to the investors page of Calcimimetics' website. With me today are Dr. Rachel Lahine, CEO, and Dr. Sudarshan Hebbar, CMO. Before turning the call over to Rachel, I would like to remind you that this call will contain remarks concerning Calcimimetics' future expectations, plans, and prospects, which constitute forward-looking statements for the purpose of the Safe Harbor provision under the Private Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1995. Actual results may differ materially from those anticipated by these forward-looking statements as a result of various important factors, including those discussed in our most recent quarterly report on file with the SEC. In addition, any forward-looking statements represent our views only as of the date of this recording and should not be relied upon as representing our views as of any subsequent date. We specifically disclaim any obligation to update such statements. With that, I will now pass the conference over to Rachel.
Thank you, Sylvie, and thanks everyone for joining today's call. I'm thrilled today to share the positive top-line results from our CARPO Phase 2b trial evaluating OXORA, our investigational CRAC channel inhibitor, in patients with acute pancreatitis with SIRS. Overall, we're delighted that the trial accomplished exactly what we set out to do. It established a dose response for OXORA across multiple endpoints, identified both target population and the likely drug dose for a pivotal trial, and reaffirmed OXORA's safety profile and tolerability as seen in prior clinical trials. With these data in hand, we plan to move OXORA forward into Phase 3 development in acute pancreatitis and have enhanced our confidence in the upcoming Phase 2 COURAGE trial in acute kidney injury, which we anticipate reading out in 2025. Before asking Sudarshan to walk through the data in more detail, I'll provide some context on how this study fits into our program. OXORA is a potent, selective small molecule inhibitor of ORI1-containing CRAC channels. Aberrant activation of these channels may play a key role in the pathobiology of a range of acute and chronic inflammatory syndromes, making CRAC channel inhibition a compelling novel mechanism across a number of diseases. To date, we've demonstrated that OXORA is clinically active and well-tolerated in multiple Phase 2 trials spanning diseases of the pancreas and lung. These studies have demonstrated consistent effects on various endpoints, including mortality, severe organ failure, reduced hospital stays, and now time to solid food tolerance. With Phase 2b CARPO data announced today, we have built upon this robust set of data and cleared a hurdle in advancing to late-stage development. Beyond acute pancreatitis, we are developing OXORA for asparaginase-induced pancreatic toxicity in pediatric patients and in acute kidney injury. Both have studies underway and are expected to deliver data in 2025. Importantly, we believe the results we've seen today enhance our confidence in these additional indications. In addition to OXORA, we are also developing an oral CRAC channel inhibitor, which is intended to provide a profile that enables expansion into various major chronic diseases. With the potential advancement into Phase 3 in acute pancreatitis and multiple additional Phase 2 catalysts, including acute kidney injury, we believe 2024 and 2025 will be transformative for Calcimimetics. Now, let's dive into the CARPO trial. Over to you, Sudarshan.
Thank you, Rachel. CARPO is an international randomized, double-blinded, placebo-controlled, dose-ranging trial intended to establish Voxzora's dose response and efficacy in acute pancreatitis with accompanying SIRS. The trial reached its target enrollment of 216, with patients randomized into four groups to receive either high, medium, or low dose of Voxzora or matched dose of placebo. Treatment was delivered intravenously every 24 hours for a total of three doses. Patient assessment was performed daily until discharge or day 30. The primary endpoint of the study was time to solid food tolerance, which is an important indicator of recovery in acute pancreatitis. Key secondary endpoints included length of hospital stay and severe organ failure. An important concept of the study was the pre-specification of patient subgroups anticipated to respond to therapy. This schematic is very simple but makes the point. In acute critical illness, there tends to be a level of severity shown here in this middle region that responds best to therapy. We anticipated this to be the case in acute pancreatitis and stratified patients accordingly. Specifically, we added inclusion criteria to enroll patients with an elevated hematocrit, an established biomarker of inflammation. Studies have shown that elevated hematocrit on hospital admission is associated with more severe acute pancreatitis, likely due to systemic inflammation causing leakage of fluids into the interstitial space. Results from our phase 2A study were consistent with this concept and informed the thresholds we used to define the hematocrit level for subgroup analysis in CARPO. Hyperinflammatory patients were defined as those with a hematocrit of greater than or equal to 44% in men or 40% in women. You'll see this subgroup broken out in our data slides to isolate the effect in this population. The hematocrit was used in addition to other inclusion criteria, including peripancreatic fluid collection and severe pain with abdominal examination that may allow us to analyze patients with varying severity. Our statistical plan was designed to evaluate these pre-specified subgroups to inform the target population for the registrational program. We shared this plan with the FDA before database lock. The baseline characteristics for the trial are shown on slide 9. Patients were well matched for all baseline characteristics, with the exception that the placebo group had approximately a 12% lower proportion of patients with a high hematocrit, i.e. the hyperinflamed patients, than the study overall. On the primary endpoint of median time to solid food tolerance, the pre-specified subgroup of patients with hyperinflammatory acute pancreatitis showed a statistically significant dose response. Patients in the placebo group received 113.5 hours, or 4.7 days, to tolerate solid food, whereas those in the low, medium, and high dose group required 78, 64, and 67 hours, respectively. These reductions of approximately 2 days in the high and medium dose group versus placebo are clinically significant because tolerating solid food earlier leads to earlier discharge. In patients without hyperinflammatory AP, Voxzora did not show a measurable benefit in time to solid food tolerance due to patients eating quickly in all treatment groups. One final point. Patients with hyperinflammatory acute pancreatitis treated with Voxzora tolerated solid food in a similar time frame to those without hyperinflammatory acute pancreatitis. We believe this is strong evidence of the biological activity of the drug in reducing inflammation. On slide 11 is data on the length of hospital stay. In patients with hyperinflammatory acute pancreatitis, the mean length of hospital stay was reduced from 7.8 days on placebo to 6.3 days and 5.7 days for the high and medium dose, respectively. A reduction was also observed in the total study population, with a 1.2 day reduction in mean length of hospital stay for both the high and medium dose versus placebo. Importantly, no high-dose patients and only one medium-dose patient remained in the hospital over 21 days. Combined, this represents an 84% relative reduction when compared to the placebo and low-dose groups. Now we'll take a look at the data on severe organ failure. Here, a statistically significant dose response was seen across the study population. You can see that the high and medium dose groups recorded only two severe organ failures per group, whereas the placebo and low dose groups recorded five such failures each. This translates to a 62% and 57% risk reduction for the high and medium doses, respectively, versus placebo. At the bottom of the slide, we've listed the definitions used for severe organ failure. Suffice to say, all these are incredibly serious and life-threatening conditions, so limiting such events is very promising and very important. My last slide covers the adverse events in the study. Overall, Oxura was well-tolerated. 20 treatment-emergent SAEs were reported in the placebo group, only 14 in the high-dose group, 21 in the medium-dose group, and 23 in the low-dose group. The number of patients discontinuing study drug due to a treatment-emergent adverse event was lower in the Oxura groups than in the placebo group. Finally, one patient with a treatment-emergent adverse event leading to death was recorded in each of the medium-dose and placebo groups, whereas none were recorded for the high and low dose groups. Now, let me hand over to Rachel to provide closing comments.
We're looking for. We've demonstrated a dose response for Oxura in acute pancreatitis, which is a huge step forward for developing a therapy in an underserved condition that lacks any approved therapies. Oxura was well tolerated and performed consistently across multiple important endpoints, likely to underpin our registrational program. There are two key next steps in acute pancreatitis. We will be analyzing additional data, including CT scans, in the weeks ahead and plan to share more at a medical meeting later this year. Additionally, we are planning an end of phase two meeting with the FDA before kicking off the pivotal program. Beyond acute pancreatitis, we look forward to our upcoming catalysts, including the COURAGE trial in acute kidney injury, which will read out in 2025, or we expect to read out in 2025. COURAGE is enrolling patients with renal and respiratory failure, and we believe Oxura may reduce the progression to severe organ failure in this population, as was demonstrated here with the CARPO trial. Today, we have made a significant advancement for patients suffering from acute inflammatory conditions and for Calcimedica. Thank you to the patients and investigators who made this possible. I will now hand it back to the operator to coordinate our Q&A session. Thank you.
Thank you. At this time, we will begin the question and answer session. A reminder to please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Also note that we are only taking spoken questions and not written ones. We also ask that you please limit yourself to one question and one follow-up. And your first questions come from Leland Gershell at Oppenheimer. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, Rachel. Thank you for taking the questions. Looks like a nice data set. Just want to ask, in terms of the death that was seen in one of the Oxura groups, if you could share more color on that. And then also wanted to ask Dr. Habardi, any particular information from the study that increases your confidence in the AK opportunity among the various data points? Thank you.
Since you want to take both of those, deaths and AKI?
Yeah, so the death occurred in a patient who was probably too sick for the intervention to work. It was a patient who had acute pancreatitis due to a small bowel infarction. So as the slide that we showed, so some patients, the intervention won't work no matter what because they're too severe. And this patient was likely too severe. Small bowel infarction by itself carries a significant morbidity and mortality. And the death was likely due to that event rather than the acute pancreatitis that occurred as a result of that event. As far as the acute kidney injury patients, Leland, I believe you're asking, do this patient reflect the acute kidney injury population? We believe that the acute kidney injury population that we're studying in COURAGE has the same hyperinflammatory milieu that the patients in CARPO had. This makes us very optimistic and enhances our confidence that we will see the same reduction in severe organ failure, the need for mechanical ventilation, the need for dialysis, the need for pressors for cardiovascular support in that population as we saw in the CARPO population.
Thanks very much.
Thank you. Next question will be from Catherine Novak at Jones Research. Please go ahead.
Hi, morning everyone. I just wanted to ask, you know, how do you think this impacts your regulatory pathway, you know, with seeing the most pronounced impact in hyperinflammatory patients? You know, what percent does this represent? Do you anticipate that this will be the primary population for the phase three? And then I guess about, you know, the hyperinflammatory patients that elevated hematocrit, is this like ED vitals? Is this, you know, upon enrollment or did this emerge throughout the course of the study? Thanks.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you. We will be discussing the population for phase three with the FDA. We've not yet gone through all the data. And we don't know exactly what our final thoughts will be with regards to the population. I would note that there was signal in the entire population on most of the endpoints. So we'll be figuring out once we figure out with the FDA what the endpoints are going to be in the pivotal trial. We'll be sort of refining our thinking around the population. With regards to the hematocrit, that we based the selection of patients on the hematocrit when they came into the hospital was measured actually at the time of enrollment. So that wasn't something that emerged during treatment. It was basically before treatment.
Okay. And then just if one more, I don't know if you've presented this, but for group patients with high and low hematocrit, do you have those data? I mean, you mentioned you've seen a signal. But, you know, how strong was the signal?
Are you referring to time to solid food tolerance or just in general?
Yeah.
So Darshan showed that. I'll let him comment on that data.
Yeah. So the time to solid food tolerance it was in the entire population affected by the patients with the low hematocrit population. As mentioned, pre-specified that we actually wanted to look at the hyperinflammatory patients. The issue with acute pancreatitis is that it is a syndrome in which there are a variety of degrees of severity of patients. And we believe that for time to solid food tolerance, the high hematocrit patients actually represented the best measure, the best view to see the efficacy of the drug. That noted, the organ failure was in the entire population, including those with low hematocrit. So the signal, which is very strong in reducing severe organ failure, actually included both the low hematocrit and high hematocrit patients together.
Okay, got it. So that could be potentially important for FDA. They don't just want to look at high hematocrit and low hematocrit patients.
That's correct.
Okay. Thanks for clarifying. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Next question will be from Joe Pantginis at Wainwright. Please go ahead.
everybody. Good morning. Thanks for taking the question. Obviously, it looks like a nice data set to move forward with. So maybe I'll start with the forward-looking statement, if you will, Rachel. So coming into the FDA, how would you define your wish list? Because obviously, one of the things that was being potentially considered was, time to solid food, which was the key endpoint here. Where do your discussions sort of stand in that? And, where do you even look at, the reducing ventilation even in the more severe patients in the sort of endpoint hierarchy. So what's your general wish list right now going into the FDA? Thanks.
So the FDA had always told us that we were going to need to have some sort of co-primary or composite endpoint. And so we're going to be looking at time to solid food tolerance, but also, this organ failure signal is really important to us. And even since our conversations with the FDA, it's grown in importance given, the results we've seen in other trials like CARDEA, our COVID pneumonia study. And as we think about the program in toto, because organ failure is really key to courage, and it's going to be sort of the driver of of the courage results. So, I think we'll be looking at how we can use organ failure, as part of, a primary endpoint, in acute pancreatitis, maybe in combined with, some other outcome measure like a time to solid food tolerance, or even, a time in hospital or a time to medically indicated discharge. We have a lot of data to go through. We're not even close to, this is just sort of the tip of the iceberg. And we've got, the CT scans that we'll have later this summer. And so as we look at the data in toto, we'll be refining that. But I think our main thinking right now is, how do we sort of bring the organ failure signal, to the fore as we think about acute pancreatitis. And again, that organ failure signal was across the entire patient population. So that was that is something that we're seeing, basically it's pretty compelling as you look at the data.
No, that's very helpful. Thanks. And then I guess, when you look at the data, I mean, the spreads are, pretty compelling, and helpful here, across the board, days to discharge, et cetera. So I guess with that said, how do you feel, and I'd say let's use a Kaplan-Meier curve analogy, for example, how do you feel that the placebo group having, say, 12% less or lower hematocrits, versus the treatment groups might have impacted, their overall statistical plan? Is it considered a confounding factor? Because it doesn't appear so right now.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to look at that pretty closely. We've been having some internal discussions about that imbalance, if you will, and we'll be sort of teasing through may have done. I mean, the good news is we saw a signal despite, that wind in our face, if you will. And so that's the good news. So we don't, we'll be sorting through that as, with a lot of other stuff in the coming weeks. But it's hard, it's hard to sort of say exactly what we might have seen if that hadn't been the case. But we're happy with what we saw.
Sure. And then, more of a rhetorical statement. I'm looking forward to, over the longer term, your potential analyses for the pharmacoeconomic benefits. But congrats on the data and looking forward to the next steps.
Thank you very much. Yeah, we're excited about the pharmacoeconomic benefits. I mean, one, I should say, when we did some initial market research on looking at this program and its potential, one of the things that came across very, very strongly was the fact that organ failure would be a driver for doctors to, in terms of adoption. In fact, it was probably the strongest factor. As we looked at sort of the feedback from about 43 docs that we interviewed before we ever went in, and with organ failure, sort of on the order of what we've seen, they not only would the vast majority prescribed the drug, but they were pretty price insensitive when it came to the drug if we were basically going to solve the problem of organ failure. So very excited again about that as an outcome of this trial.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next question will be from Tony Butler at Rodman and Renshaw. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. Good morning. Sebastian, what if you look at high versus low hematocrit levels, can you say what that range is, at least at the high side? And moreover, at baseline, can you actually determine via scan some difference in the magnitude in a high hematocrit patient population? That's question one. And then, Rachel, on a phase three, sorry to sort of jump ahead here, but there could be a reason to take two doses forward and then a placebo. I'd be interested in your thought process or the team's thought process on moving forward as opposed to just one active dose to take two active doses forward. Thank you very much.
So, Tony, thank you for the question. I'll answer the first one. The hematocrit threshold were defined as a binary cutoff. As mentioned, greater than or equal to 44% in men or in greater than or equal to 40% in women was considered high hematocrit based on the data that we had seen from our phase 2A trial. Anything below that was considered low hematocrit. So we had one cutoff. The second part of your question, we have yet to receive the full data set on the CT scans, but we will definitely look at the relationship between hematocrits and the degree of CT of severity of the pancreatitis in the CT scan readings when we receive them.
So, Tony, to follow up on your question about multiple doses, I think we will be picking one dose, and clearly we had a nice signal in both the 1 mg/kg and 2 mg/kg doses. I would note that Encourage, our dose is right in that range. We're doing a 2 mg/kg first or loading dose, and then following it with 4 1.6 mg/kg doses. So, we're very pleased that, we're kind of right in the range in Courage. And, we'll probably be playing around with, or looking at, doing something like that in acute pancreatitis patients. We will be getting a lot of PK data, to analyze as we go through, over the next couple, months. The PK analysis is going to be very important here and will probably help determine exactly where we land. But I think we would only do one dose. I mean, I don't see us doing two doses. It would not, it would add expense and probably add complexity that we don't need in a pivotal program.
Appreciate the answer. Thanks, Rich. Thank you, Sidor.
Thank you.
Next question will be from Julian Harrison at BTIG. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Let me add my congratulations to these data. The hospital stay reductions look very encouraging. I'm wondering if you could put cost savings in context for us, and do you have a good sense now for payer receptivity on that benefit?
We thought the hospital stay benefit was great. Our KOLs have indicated that even a one-day delta reduction for the drug would be very beneficial in terms of the hospital system. So, we kind of checked that box. But what we had really been focused on was the tail, these patients who are in the hospital for weeks and even months. In our phase 2A study, we had a patient in the hospital for 3 months. It was a standard care patient, but 3 months before she ended up dying. And so, the cost of the system is huge. And that's one of the reasons acute pancreatitis is one of the costliest GI diseases or GI complications for the hospital. So, that tail is really, really important. So we're really happy that like nobody in the high dose group was in the hospital for more than 3 weeks, and only one patient in the medium dose group. And that is something, as we go forward, we'll be looking at from a pharmacoeconomic benefit even more. That is, you know, and we'll be doing work, talking to payers, because that then becomes a payer question more than even a doc question. The docs, you know, like the organ failure, you know, because they like to be able to do something for the patients. And then, you know, of course, the administrators like it if, you know, the patients aren't costing the hospital, you know, hundreds, if not, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars. So we'll be analyzing that in more detail. But it was one of the bogeys for this study, and we were happy to see what we got.
Okay, great. That's very helpful. And then one more question, if I may. The end of phase two meeting with the FDA, are the CT scans the gating step there, or are you waiting on other data from the study?
I'm sorry, you asked if the CTs were the only thing we're waiting for?
For the gating
yes,
data.
Yes,
so, there's the CTs, but there's other data that we're pulling together. You know, for example, there's labs that need to still come in. The PK data, as I mentioned before, is going to be really important in terms of figuring out exactly what happened, you know, sort of on a patient-by-patient basis. The CTs are obviously incredibly important because some of the composite type analysis we'll be doing will include data coming out of the CTs. And then, you know, each patient filled out a diary, and these diaries are actually quite robust in the end. You know, you always wonder as you start what you're going to get, but they're fairly robust. And so there's a fair bit of data that sort of spans, you know, the post discharge period that we would like to really understand and go through. So there's a lot to do. And that, you know, we anticipate that taking us into the fall, and then sometime later this year, we anticipate presenting, you know, the bulk of this data in a medical meeting, and then, of course, publishing.
Okay, great. Thank you, and congrats again.
Thank you.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question, please press star followed by one on your telephone keypad. And your next question will be from Frank Lorenzo at Singular Research. Please go ahead.
Good morning, and congratulations on moving forward. Can you give us a little more granularity on potential timing of the FDA meeting, and also beyond that, possibly the timing of a phase three start? Is it reasonable to assume that there would be a single pivotal study? I'm just trying to look at, you know, when we model this and moving forward, if you can give us kind of just a ballpark time frame of the meeting and
sure.
A potential start. Thank you.
Sure. So thanks for that. We anticipate going to the FDA sometime, towards the end of the year. Maybe it may be early 2025. We anticipate starting a phase three study the first half of 2025. In terms of, single pivotal trial, we will be applying for breakthrough therapy, and that will give us an opportunity to do a single pivotal trial in this setting. We think a good candidate for that. So, all of this is pending a discussion with the FDA. We don't anticipate, that discussion is probably several months off. We still need to get all of the data together before we can even sort of frame our discussion. First half of 2025, for moving forward. And we do hope that we will be able to negotiate a single phase three pivotal trial.
Thank you.
Thank you. And at this time, Dr. Lahiney, we have no other questions registered. Please proceed.
Okay, well, thank you, Sylvie, and thank you, Sudarshan, and thank you all for joining the call this morning. Of course, we'll be available to answer your questions in the coming, today and in the coming days. We're very excited about the results, and I hope everyone has a great Thursday. Thanks a lot. Bye now.
Thank you.
Bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, this does indeed conclude your conference call for today. We thank you all for attending and for your questions. You may now disconnect your lines. Have a great day.